From the basement studios of the Atlantic Voice, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
We're down in the basement studio on the eve of one of our special edition episodes where we are going to have cuts of music and all kinds of things. I always feel these are more special than our regular episodes where we're just talking.
It certainly seems to entail more logistics, that's for sure.
Well, you are very well prepared, I will say that. And as the technical side of the operation, I can only say how fortunate I am to be pulled along in the wake of your technical know-how. Talking of technical, we have some news before we start with our special edition. Big news for the pod, we're now on iTunes. That is a big deal. For some reason, I feel like it makes us legitimate. But the first question I wanted to have for you is, because of your long-standing position on all things Apple, don't you feel like you're a bit of a sellout?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there is a certain amount of legitimacy to it, and it's because of what Apple's systems are, is these closed systems into which, you know, ooh, I got into the system, like I am an approved, you know, like its negatives are equally why it's impressive that, or it's pleasing that we're in there. Like, so we made it over
society.
These hurdles. Like, you know, anybody can do, you know, obviously anybody can do a podcast because we just winged it and put it together.
No one does a podcast as well as us. Let me say that right now.
But anybody can do that. But the fact that it got listed into iTunes, you know, gives an air of legitimacy. You know, when people, I don't have any Apple products, of course, but when I was setting up somebody's iPhone to access it, there it is. You know, there's our logo and all that sort of stuff is a very, you know, in the system kind of thing. So it's
so let me paraphrase briefly then. You want to have it both ways.
I do want
to. Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
you're okay with us being on iTunes, but that's not going to change your long-held credo vis-a-vis Apple products and all things i and Mac and what have you.
Yeah, well, I mean, because it's a difference between what I would consume. Like, I still want to use a more open thing in terms of my consumption of things and, you know, where I want to be promoted. I'd rather be on HBO, but it doesn't mean I might like a different station better.
Well, if we're on HBO, we could probably swear more. let me say one thing about the iTunes. I have now, obviously, I do actually listen to us again.
Mm-hmm.
But I like listening to us again. One, because it helps our circulation numbers.
That's right.
But I've been listening on iTunes because it feels different now we're on iTunes. Have you listened to us again via iTunes, or have you decided that you're still not going to do that, even though you are ready to see that we're on iTunes, but just out of principle?
You know, I don't have an iPad or an iPhone, so I haven't listened to it that way. I have the iTunes software on the computer so that we could do a bunch of these things, and so I have listened to it that way, but I don't really. I typically listen to the things on my phone and in the car and stuff like that, so I don't even have the equipment to do
that. All right, so you didn't listen to it via iTunes.
No.
I have a family member that listened to it via iTunes, and then that same family member decided to call me to complain that, A, they were listed out of order, and that, B, we were next to someone else with Atlantic in its name.
Yeah.
Now, this family member, they've done a lot of things on iTunes. And yet, for some reason, they decided that because it was us, they were going to be surprised that things were listed in alphabetical order.
That's right. Yeah.
I then had to explain that just because we were now on iTunes wouldn't suddenly mean that iTunes would be changing their whole operating system just to feature us.
Yeah, I don't know where else we would be put other than next to other things that started with Atlantic.
Yes. I mean, in the same way that Bruce Springsteen is next to Benny Hill.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're both Bs.
Yeah.
Nah, so there you are. So anyway, we're on iTunes. That is the big news. And I also know, before we get on with the show, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about resolutions. You finally went for your cooking class, and I know that the knife skills wasn't really a resolution, but you did were taught some knife skills at
your
cooking class.
Yeah, it had a part of it. The class itself was not on knife skills. There was a class, actually, coincidentally, just before the one I went to that was really just about working with knives, but there was a segment where we were cutting. I think we were cutting onions.
Okay.
And they gave us a whole technique, both in terms of using the knife, and, you know, you do the bit where you curl your fingers in a way so you don't end up with fingers in your food. You know, this way you don't chop off the tips of your fingers, so you use your knuckles as a guide, and, you know, making sure you're slicing with the right motion and how you hold the blade, which is like, you know, you hold your forefinger and your thumb up actually on the blade, and the rest is holding the handle. It's not like holding a big axe. It was sort of interesting. And then the onion thing, they had a whole technique, which I'm sure people who cook more often than I do knew this already. But, you know, by cutting the onion in a way ahead of time towards the root, but not cutting it all the way through, it kind of holds itself together so that when you chop it, it comes out very neatly.
Did you feel more chef-like?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a good class overall. It was all about...
But, I mean, handling the implement.
I think so. I mean, I kind of knew some of this stuff already. I just hadn't really done it. So, you know, I was kind of aware of it from watching.
But it wasn't really a skills class. It was actually more of a cooking class.
Yeah, it was like a... It was an Italian meal, and so, like, our first course was a... It was sort of like bruschetta, but made into a salad. So the bread was chopped up into little pieces and grilled and things like that. And then we had a course that was a polenta, and then we had some chicken, and there was a panna cotta dessert. It's basically creme brulee without the torching it on top, basically, I think is the same thing, but it's the Italian version.
So a bit like, so basically the class was a bit like joining Al-Qaeda.
How so?
Well... You're going to be using a box cutter, but it's kind of expected you've got some skills with that when you first show up.
All right.
Fair enough. Boom. Well, I watched Zero Dark Thirty this week.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Hence the Al-Qaeda joke.
Yeah. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it was all right, yeah. I mean, I know how it turned out.
It wasn't a big surprise.
You know, no, what a big surprise, yeah. No, very entertaining.
One of the winning, the Washington Post here has that tweet, the peeps. People do dioramas with little peep, you know, the marshmallow peeps.
Always around Easter, yes.
You know, and they do this competition, and you do dioramas of, like, things in the news, and you put the little peeps in the position. So the winner was some sort of, like, it was like a funeral for Twinkies, you know,
okay.
Because the Twinkie going out of business.
All right.
But, like, one of the second or third places was Zero Peep 30, and it was like a shot of the compound with the peeps all in camouflage and carrying a batty bag out of the compound, and like one of the helicopters had like a cloud of, you know, smoke coming out of it and stuff like that. and the commentary said, you know, they admitted that somebody might think this was in bad style, but they thought it was done appropriately. It was
let me say this. Me making box cutter Al-Qaeda jokes on the podcast, some people will probably take offense that it's in poor taste.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, a national newspaper running a competition to reenact the killing and capture and killing, or whatever you want to put it, Osama bin Laden.
In one of those orders, one or the other.
With reenacting that with candy is perfectly acceptable.
Apparently.
Fair enough. So let's move on. Now, special edition. I can't remember if we talked about this.
I think we've made some
reference
to it. So what this is a couple of weeks ago. So it was before we did the last podcast, but we decided it merited its own discussion because it dealt with the audio. It's the Library of Congress of the United States, which is it is what it is. I mean, it sounds like it is the official research arm and library of the Congress, although it, you know, has a wider use amongst the government. Well, they have a segment of their activities called the National Recording Registry. And back in 2002, I think this was put in by an act of Congress, and their task is to sort of collect up or anoint certain recordings as being great historical recordings in a value that people should preserve for all time kind of thing.
So let me ask you a question. And obviously, those of you out there listening now know this is going to be a very educational and informative episode of The Atlantic Voice.
I'm not so sure about that, but
traditionally, the Library of Congress kept all the boring stuff.
They actually keep everything.
Like, so that's what I'm saying, but boring stuff.
Well, no, but
you can't go into the National Library of Congress and get a copy of 50 Shades of Grey.
No, you can't. But 50 Shades of Grey had to be sent there. Every book that gets published, two copies get sent to the Library of Congress. People sometimes think that the Library of Congress keeps all of them. In fact,
what do they do with them?
They send them off to other libraries.
Pulp,
you know,
them?
They don't. They're sort of a charitable gift. They give them out to some other library or educational institution. But it's a requirement, I guess, basically to run it past the Library of Congress to see if they'd like to put a version on their shelf.
Oh, I see.
So, like, all the books are done that way, and so that's their main. I think that's a great volume of things. This National Recording Registry is, you know, I think a drop in the bucket compared to all their regular types of research work. And
you say that now, and I will admit this up front, is that traditionally when we do these fact-based shows, I do very little in the way of research. Basically, my partner does all the research, and I just sit here and make stupid comments. I did go online in researching this episode. Now, the Library of Congress is down in Washington, D.C. It's quite near Congress, like the actual building. Now, I don't know where they keep some of the stuff, but that's like the headquarters.
Sure.
For this National Recording Registry, which is basically a library but of recordings, I know that sounds very obvious, but it's a library of recordings, They've built their own building out in the state of Virginia, white marble, concrete,
really
yeah, next to a lake. It's in Culpeper, Virginia. And here's a reference point. For any of you who have seen Live Free or Die Hard, it looks like that building that they're trying to attack with all the information and computers in it.
Okay.
It looks I go to the website, Library of Congress, National Recording Registry. It looks like a Frank Lloyd Wright / James Bond. It overlooks a lake.
Huh.
All very sleek. But that's what I'm saying. Like, this is a legit thing.
Yeah, well, either that or it's cover for something that's much more important,
well,
right?
Yeah.
It does seem like, because... So what they do
just
is
watch Live Free or Die Hard, which, frankly, I'm now going to make the case that because of that, that should be in the registry somewhere. But obviously, I think we'll discover that it is not.
Yeah, I mean, the main function of this thing is ever
not
since...
Not if 50 Shades of Grey didn't make it.
Right. Since 2002 is they pick a certain set of recordings. It was initially 50, and then it dropped down to 20, 50 per year, and then it dropped down to 25... And
is that sound in there?
I think that was just telling me the score of the Nationals
That's
probably going to do it. That probably would be end of ninth inning. So I think that's the Nationals game. But it's not like the recordings take up a lot of space. I mean, like, their task is to preserve recordings generally. So maybe they do a lot more than the ones that they're kind of putting to the official registry. But it's,
sure.
But I mean, you know, with an MP3 player, you could record everything from a whole year. It could put it on a little thumb drive. I don't think they need a big building for
that. That's what I'm saying. It's not like back in the day. I think when we traditionally think of the Library of Congress, it's like if there was a nuclear Armageddon,
right,
copies of that book, Treasure Island, would still be found there, preserved for all time.
Yep.
But I actually think now, not that the fear of alien attack is any less than it would have been before.
Or meteor attack,
whatever it may be that's going to wipe us all out. But basically, the National Recording Registry is more like a hall of fame.
That's the way I look at it.
They're basically saying that this recording is important. Boom, hall of fame.
Right, right. So, like, the legislative intent, apparently, is to develop this national program for guarding America's sound recording. I'm reading straight out of Wikipedia here.
But you lot at home are learning a lot right now. It's educational session.
Establish the registry specifically for the purpose of maintaining and preserving sound recordings and collections of sound recordings that are culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. So I think it is like a very much like a hall of fame, which is what made it interesting to us, is that, you know, somebody's making judgments as to what are the best or the most important recordings each year. And so, hey, listen, who are we not to second guess them?
But that's the thing. We are going to second guess them.
Exactly.
Because here's the problem with this hall of fame. This is a hall of fame run by the librarian guy. And I know we have a couple of listeners, fans, who are librarians, so I'm not having to go at librarians, but I do not think of them as being the very first stop in terms of what is culturally significant.
Yeah, so the article that
Sorry, librarian listeners.
The short article that was out in the Washington Post mentions that the librarian of Congress is James Billington and talks about
so who's
this
dude?
Exactly. Well, I mean, I assume he's got some credentials. I don't think he just came straight off of the street.
Convince me.
But, well, I don't know. I don't have his credentials here. I'm just saying, I'm assuming he does. But the way they describe it is they say there's a board who offers advice to Billington, who then selects the recordings. And so it sounds as if this guy is selecting the recordings. I'm going
to
guess that's not true, but
I'd
it's
like
much funnier if
not.
It was.
Yeah, it would be funny, yeah. Basically, if the fellow was a big James Taylor fan,
exactly,
all of James Taylor's albums would be in there.
Each year he just puts another
exactly,
one of their albums
but,
in.
You know, yeah, people like me who like The Clash, no chance we're not getting in there.
Yeah.
But obviously, and I did read somewhere, that regular citizens, we can email or write and actually say, I would like this to be considered.
Oh, well, maybe once we record this, we should just send the whole thing in.
Oh, now that we're on iTunes, I don't see why we shouldn't be. Again, I'm going to promote ourselves.
That's right. Yeah, I nominate myself to be put into the registry. So to give you sort of a taste, and we're going to talk at length about all the different categories and things like that, but just to give you a taste of what we're talking about here, you know, it's obviously it's going to include things, music recordings, but it's also including a lot of spoken word type things or, you know, recordings of historical events and things like that. So, for example, just to give you a taste, this year of the 25 things, among the 25 things that were nominated, one was a D-Day radio broadcast by a journalist, George Hicks, the original cast album of South Pacific, Simon and Garfunkel's album, or I guess maybe it's a song, just Sounds of Silence. Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon,
yeah,
when it went in this year. And that actually, I think that just hit its 40th anniversary. I remember there was something on the radio.
Yeah, that's about right, isn't it? Yeah.
And the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. You know, all these, you know, like, it's not necessarily all just based on quality. It can be aesthetically pleasing, but it's sort of cultural significance as well, which is where you can see sort of Saturday Night Fever Saturday coming Night Fever. In there and things like that. Some of the other ones that have been recently, I think, was Chubby Checker's The Twist. You know,
yeah, culturally significant.
Some recordings by Philip Glass, which I'm sure we've not listened to. I think the Ramones' first album just went in this year.
You know, I did punk see album, that, yeah.
But we're going to talk more about the various categories, but just to give you a sort of a sample of what might be going in. And with the 25 things, there's a whole bunch of other ones that aren't even mentioned in the article because just for the same reasons we're not mentioning them is you'd have no idea what they were. Like, you know, a number of them would be sort of interesting sort of scientific recordings or things like that. And so it is, you know, hard to know exactly what's going on.
There is a lot of niche stuff, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we should mention, right, so the nominations are in a bunch of categories. And the categories are kind of funny in and of themselves. And just in alphabetical order, you know, they're blues, expected.
All right, I get that.
Broadway musical theater soundtracks, expected. There's a category for Cajun Zydeco, quote, swamp music.
Now, I know what Cajun is. Very spicy. They always put okra in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Zydeco or swamp is.
Well, I think it's all that genre of New Orleans bayou type music type of thing. And that,
like Deliverance.
No, I think that would give all the Deliverance. Comfort. The banjo things would be more of a... there's probably definitely an amount of banjo in it, but I mean, it's sort of French influence, horns, you know, New Orleans jazz, although I guess that probably wouldn't be Cajun Zydeco. It's probably a lot of like rattling of washboards
okay.
and things like
all right,
that.
Fair enough.
Children's recordings, choral, classical.
That might be the only way Atlantic Voice Podcast is getting in, via children's recordings.
I was about to say, I thought we were going to say, was it the comedy one? No, it must have been that you took
children's
the joke already.
Recordings.
Comedy and novelty, country bluegrass, documentary, spoken word, environmental, which I don't really know, field, which I don't, I mean, I think field recordings are like if you what? Went out into like, in the 20s, you went to some exotic land and you recorded things because that's what you would do because you didn't have a camera, I guess.
I want to say this for a moment, because part of getting ready for this show, you instructed me. Basically, Zef, I know you don't do any research, but can you at least make an effort and look up online what is the British equivalent?
Yeah, can you hold up your side of the Atlantic? Yeah.
So I went online and I tried to find out. I basically typed in UK equivalent of Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with something called the British Library, which I think is affiliated with the British Museum. I'm not sure. I was just sort of surfing through the pages. But I looked to see that they are doing something similar. But one of the things that I noticed about the British Library was they were recording, like, people's accents.
Mm-hmm.
So they're recording things that, as of themselves, don't mean anything, in the same way that Chubby Checker's The Twist is a 3-minute or 2.5-minute song.
Right.
Me talking
but at least
doesn't mean anything, but it is representative of this is what our country sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, so it's like a historical documentation kind of thing, just like a picture of a mountain,
right.
You know, like is telling you.
So when I'm looking at these things here for the U.S. National Recording Registry, and they've got all these different, you know, categories like comedy and country, and when we see environmental and field, maybe that's what it means. Is they're recording stuff that just says, yeah, this is what it sounds like if you live in Alabama.
I think so. I think it must be what it is. That's why I say they go off to somebody recording. Just like in the days gone by, you know, you'd take the pictures, but you didn't. See, nowadays, I think you just go with your cameras blazing and you'd film everything.
Yeah.
So it'd all be recorded. It would be recorded with the pictures alongside
it. But that's what this is as well.
By that time, yeah. But at the time, it was mostly like documenting the audio type stuff. So then we get back into more musical things, folk, ethnic, gospel, spiritual, heavy metal. There's a whole category for heavy metal.
There you go.
Jazz, Latin, pop, pre-1955 and post-1955. What is that supposed to be, like the Elvis breakpoint or something like
that?
I'm not sure.
And
what's
his name? Did Rock Around the Clock. That lot.
Yeah.
And then there's Justin Bieber, this lot.
R&B, radio, which is, I think, you know, like historic radio broadcasts, rock, and generally technology, and then rap and hip-hop.
Yeah, there you
rap
go.
And hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah. You got to, everyone's got to have their niche.
It's own genre of music. So all those categories, it's hard to tell It doesn't really say, oh, this is the one that got in on this category. So I don't know that they necessarily take somebody from every category. It's not like the Academy Awards where they're doing a best actor, best actress. They're saying these are the categories they're looking at for things that would come through, and then they pick different things. Because a lot of years they'll do multiple rock songs, and you know, maybe there won't be any rap song, or there won't be a jazz song, or things like that. So I guess, you know, that's about
short on environmental entries.
Yep.
So, yeah, I see what you're saying. So you're right. It's not like the Oscars where every year they're going 1-1-1 through each of the categories. Because I did see a lot. I see a couple of times that Paul Simon seems to be in there an awful lot.
Yeah, and now, we're going to talk about that, but in part, I think, improperly at one point. But you do wonder how much of it, even with a committee or Webedex making decisions, is
yes, cause
you know, like their own little taster.
Yeah, this fella, Billington, whatever his name is, or Billsbury, or whatever
huge
his name is.
Paul Simon fan.
Well, apparently, yeah. So now he's got a corner on the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
Plus, he doubled his chances by doing all those albums with ethnical different musics. What's the famous one? Graceland,
which
so he's
we'll talk
clearly
about.
He's clearly positioning himself, Paul Simon now, to dominate in lots of categories to ensure that he is preserved forever.
Yep. So I mentioned before, just setting all the groundwork here, I mentioned before that they, for the first few years, they were putting in 50 a year. And then they do 25 a year for most of the time period since they started doing this stuff. And I think, I do wonder, there's nothing saying why they made the change, but it is the kind of thing that...
Maybe the fellow's only working part-time. Because if he's the one bloke deciding, he's like, I ain't doing 50, I'm only doing 25.
Been sequestered this year, there'll only be 12 and a half items in. But there's only so many things out there to put in. It's not like the world cranks out 25 new things a year. And so, like, when you first do this stuff, just think about it. When you did that first one, you're like, oh, my goodness, we can pick the 50 best things that existed ever, right? But now you get to the next year, and like, well, now what am I doing? Am I picking 50 through 100, or was I supposed to save some last year? I mean, how did we figure out once you get a few years in there, suddenly you're going, what else is there to pick? What else is there to pick? And so I'm sure they realized after a few years of doing 50, they were saying, there's not so many things. We need to save this back to 25 because, you know, once you get to the point where you've kind of cleared out the backlog, you know, like of the great recordings, then what are you going to do going forward? It's not like the world cranks out 25 immortal, like legendary recordings every year.
That's true. Okay, so we decided in putting together this show that we were going to break into two things. We were going to do like speeches and comedy,
right?
And then we'd do songs a bit later. So let's start with the spoken word.
Yep.
Word. You found some things that examples of the type of things that.
That's right. I mean, so like the first bunch of things was sort of historical speeches type of things. And so, for example, we have Kennedy's inauguration speech.
Seek to invoke the wonders of science.
And this is the speech that, now I'm realizing that once I've done it, I think I need to move ahead to the point that everybody will recognize.
Walk of the deserts, balance of power. And the peace preserved. Or will it be finished in the first 1,000 days?
Almost
certain. Will do for you.
There we go.
My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
So that's sort of confusing because that's actually the line after that. But I'm jumping around.
Well, he got it wrong.
Because
he got it wrong.
Well, interestingly enough,
ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
All right, fair enough.
So that's the big famous one. But in fact, it was interesting when I was listening to this recording. That's not the only thing he said, obviously. It's not like he went out there, one line, drop the mic, walk away, you know, kind of thing. It's a whole speech. It's his inauguration speech. So in fact, after doing that line of ask not what your country do, he then turns to the world and says, ask, you know, to the world, you know, ask, sort of parallel structure of the speech. But we never hear anything except for the ask not what your, ask, you know, the country thing.
Well, this is the thing, and I'm now going to give free advice to any budding politicians out there. When you're making a speech, don't have too many killer lines in it. Because if you do, that's all people remember. Like you've just said there, we all know ask not what our country, you know, all that. We know that, but the rest of what he went over for an hour, no one remembers any of that.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have bothered. He should have just got up there, delivered the one line, boom, everyone cheers. That goes in the library. Puts his head, bows, takes the applause, gets to work.
You know, tip your waitresses, good night, everybody.
That's right, good night, everyone. I'll be here next week. But unfortunately, with historical stuff, what happens is that one moment supersedes everything else.
Yeah, well, and it gets a name. Like, so interesting enough, when I was looking this up, I didn't necessarily even remember it was inauguration speech. Of course, it makes perfect sense once I realized it, but I was just thinking of it as the ask not what your country can do for you speech, you know, so I had to look around for sort of things.
So with that in mind, and I don't know if you have this queued up, so while you do whatever you're doing, I did look through the list of stuff that they put in, and a couple of years later, they put in Neil Armstrong's, you know, I do this for everyone on the planet when he gets off the spaceship.
Yeah, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. I do not have that queued up.
That's all right, but this is my point now. Neil Armstrong, he knows where it's at. He don't have to write some whole speech. He just thinks up one killer line. Spaceship lands, door opens, he jumps out, says his thing about one small step, and then he's off wandering around hitting golf balls on the moon. That goes into the memory bank. And we all remember it.
But did you know
Kennedy, he talked for like an hour. Who cares what else he said?
Well, you know, we've already discussed our attention span for inaugurations. So,
there you go. So yes.
No doubt that this would have been the same situation. Actually, you know, if that had happened today, we'd all be talking about lip-syncing of the national anthem instead of his ask not what your country.
Although I do want to say this about Neil Armstrong, and I know you, before you call me on it, even though I've just given him credos and kudos for his quick speech. I personally am not convinced that we went to the moon in the first place.
Well,
but anyway, let's
move on. Whether we went or not. Actually, you know, there's a debate over, I can't remember how this debate plays out, but it's whether that was really his line. Like, he was missing a word or something clipped funny, or he said the thing. This was not off the top of his head. He wrote this thing, and so it's one. Once we think of it always as being one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
All right.
And apparently it was supposed to be, or other people think it was, one small step for a man. Like, you know, he's sort of talking about himself, taking a small step versus mankind, which kind of makes more sense in terms of contrasting the two sides of it. But we all think of it now as being one small step for man,
he's probably
and one
out
giant
of
leap for mankind.
Yeah, because there's no air up there.
Yes, no, you have to bring your own. So, like, other historical things. Now, this one, it's nothing anybody's going to recognize, but, you know, the fireside chats by Franklin Delano Roosevelt were a series of speeches he gave on the radio around wartime.
Washington's birthday is a most appropriate occasion for us to talk with each other about things as they are today and things as we know they shall be in the future.
So these aren't, there isn't necessarily a tagline the way there was for JFK's speech, but you know these were major, major recordings, and so in fact, like when they put this on the registry, it's all of his fireside chat.
So it's representative of an era.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he didn't actually say anything interesting, but it represents it.
Well, you know, coming from an era where, you know, people were really nervous about what was going on. Was during the war, pre-war, coming out of the Depression, get on there, and it was supposed to be this very friendly, sit on the radio with everybody in America, because they just had radios, not TVs, and talk to them about what's going on, and that's why it's a fireside chat.
Was he the one who said, a day that will live in infamy after Pearl Harbor?
Yes, it is. So I happen to have that available, which hopefully I have not screwed up because YouTube has been pretty uncooperative here. Let's see what happens.
Why don't you just cue up the movie? Because he says it in the movie.
What movie is that?
What, a movie with Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that wasn't really him, and that's probably not the version of the recording that's available.
Yeah, but that's history, though, isn't it? Look, Ben Affleck, he done Pearl Harbor, then he done Iran. When it comes to world history, I'm going to take Ben's words for it.
Well, that might be a mistake. See, now the great thing is when you set it up on YouTube, you have to wait for the advertisements to go, which does not help us very much in terms of trying to do this sort of stuff.
And this is what makes me say right now
yesterday,
that I'm...
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
So, you know, there's your kind of catchphrase kind of thing.
Now,
so
is that in there?
He did both of them.
Was that in there? I'm looking through, because we've actually...
No, it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
Should be in there.
Yeah.
So, basically...
If it's not, I have a bunch of tabs open for different things of when we're going to get into things that we're going to recommend. If it's not in there, it's going to show up.
So, let me say this then. So, basically, FDR is like a 1940s Paul Simon. Like, he's doing all kinds of stuff to try and corner the market in this Library of Congress.
He was president for a long time, and so, you know, he had a greater capacity of doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, other sort of obvious ones that you'd think of, and this one is, of course, in there already. And let's see if...
I have a dream that one day this nation...
All right, this nation under a groove. Okay, fair right. enough.
So now my YouTube crashed, but that is, of course, I Have a Dream from Martin Luther King and his speech in the Civil Rights March on Washington.
I want to say this. I was going to say this while my partner was queuing up these clips. We are on iTunes. We are not on YouTube because we do not want you to have to listen to adverts before you listen to
That's
us.
That's right. So well, not yet. Not until we can find somebody who's going to pay for advertising.
Well, then it'll all change.
Yeah. But, you know, some of the other sort of historical things are a little bit less like presidential leadership type things. And so, for example...
...just holding it just enough to keep it... It bursts into flames. Wait, get it started. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my, get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the morning bath. And all the folks will see that this is terrible. This is the worst of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now. And the frame is crashing to the ground. Not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the bastards.
Old so, humanity.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, the Hindenburg disaster.
That's the
of course,
famous radio commentary of the Hindenburg disaster. Now, who is it? Does it say there who that guy was? Just some radio reporter, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was just a regular radio reporter. In fact, I think there was something in about this stuff that at the time radio would only really do live stuff, and this was one of the first time things were recorded.
It was supposed
to be just it's docking type of thing.
I wanted to give him a lot of credit. Because that older...
We better look up his name, because we didn't give him credit. I have everything highlighted, so I will find it. Herbert Morrison. May 6, 1937.
He's watching this live. He's watching the Hindenburg come in, and he comes up with this great line, "Oh, the humanity." Now, there was no way he was going to be able to pre-prepare that line, because he didn't know it was going to crash that day.
No.
So that's what I'm saying. That's classic. Yeah. Whereas Kennedy... He's had all week to do his speech, yeah, and he's putting in these fake, phony lines.
Probably somebody had scripted that all.
Exactly. So, Herbert Morrison, you get the Atlantic Voice Improv Hall of Fame Award. That's what you're going to get from us. You're going to go into our Improv Library of Congress because you just made that up on the spot.
Yeah, well, you know, in fact, when you were mentioning that, it made me think of one that's not in there that might maybe belongs in there. Let's see.
Now, Petrov controls back to Harlamov, skating in on the left side. Into the American end, 55 seconds, but Mikhailov has the puck. Mikhailov sweeping in, out in front, backhander goes wide, and Nick Crate might have got just a piece of it. Mikhailov, back out to Bill.
You might have to skip forward a little bit for this one.
43 seconds remaining. We got 10 seconds, the countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz, 5 seconds left in the game. Over. You believe in miracles? Yes!
Obviously, very U.S.-centric here. This is the big upset in the hockey game. However, that one, like, it seems like the Hindenburg in the sense that, oh, you know, somebody was doing... That was actually sort of planned, I believe. I believe he had sort of written this out, like, if they could do this stuff, could they say that stuff? Now, I'm probably... Somebody's going to tell me I'm flat-out wrong. I probably should check on this before I make accusations about...
Don't check on it. We can just watch the movie with Kurt Russell.
That's right.
If that's how it turned out, then that's good enough for me. Because, again, I'm a big Kurt Russell fan. If he said that it's a miracle, that's more than enough. So, but that's not in there.
No, that's not in there.
So, Hindenburg crashing is.
Yep.
Man on the Moon is.
Yep.
Kennedy, Martin Luther King, they all are. Roosevelt in there a lot, doing his Paul Simon thing, trying to find a way to get into the library, certainly.
Well, then we get to the question, like, each of these scenes, don't you think...
I
think you've got some quibbles about the big speeches because it's too scripted and it's not as impressive, but they are still their historical recordings. I don't believe... This one probably ought to be in. I don't believe it is in... But this fits into an actual sort of historical real thing. That would be a big deal.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ronald Reagan's speech at the Berlin Wall, just, you know, as we were heading into Glasnost and Perestroika and all that stuff.
That can get in.
Yeah,
if someone nominates it to this fella when he's sitting there having his cup of tea and biscuit, he may decide, you know, Ronald Reagan's getting in this year.
Well, I almost wonder, right?
So although I want to say this, if Ronald Reagan's going to get in for his tear down this wall, I realize that Pink Floyd are already in for the Dark Side of the Moon, but personally, I think they should get in for the wall.
The wall,
We
could have him as a counterpoint, a pairing.
It'd be like 2014. War years.
Yeah.
Reagan in, Pink Floyd in again.
So the... I do wonder, like, because, like we said, that there's only so many historical things, if on a given year, if they come up with something, do they go, let's save that? You know, we don't want to put that one in this year because we won't have anything next year. And so, you know, do they have a certain number that are on the shelf that they know they're going to end up putting over time?
So Reagan might be on the shelf.
Yep.
All right.
So what other kind of important quotes can you think of that maybe should be in there? I mean, I had some that maybe are somewhat more, you know, a little bit more interesting, kind of a little bit different than others, like, for example.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never.
I'm going to tell you something right now, and I'm being sincere when I say this. That should be in.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, like, you know.
Now, we're laughing, but that, if it's part of history, and it's famous, and I guarantee everyone listening to the pod, when they heard that, they can see it in his, see it in their mind's eye, the picture of him standing at the microphone, and he's waving his finger, even though it is perhaps a controversial and slightly distasteful topic. Yep. It should still be in there.
Yeah,
because it's history.
It's history. It's like a field recording. It's like he recorded the thing at the time. It's a major marker of what was going on at the
time. If Roosevelt's going to get in for just sitting around in a chair rambling away on a Sunday night that we have to listen to because we don't have a telly, then Clinton should get in for dropping a whopper in front of everyone.
What's also amazing, and I was watching this beforehand, and another one of my family members was looking over there, and it was like, holy cow, did that guy make a comeback, right? I mean, like, you know, at that time, he's out there flat out lying about having sex with Monica Lewinsky, and, you know, much rosier looking in our rearview mirror as the Clinton presidency. Maybe that's in part due to some of the successors that came on there who's...
Before you play the next clip, I do want to digress for a minute.
Yeah.
Your family member, are they thrown out by the fact that iTunes is in alphabetical order?
They don't use iTunes.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I was looking for other clips, like, for example, you know, the next president, you know, George Bush, and I don't...
Or George W.?
I was looking for Mission Accomplished, you know, thought that would be sort of, you know, that was a big one that people...
I mean, again, that's history.
But I don't know that he ever actually said it. Like, he's on the... So I had the film of the of him being on the deck of the aircraft carrier and the big sign up over
top
of things. But I couldn't figure out whether he ever said it, so I ended up skipping that. I ended up with something different. And by the way, this quote was hard to find without a laugh track, so there's a little bit of a laugh track put on this one, so...
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. You fool me, you can't get fooled again.
You know, so that was one where I look at it, and like, it must be, you know, it's been on a lot of TV shows, and there's always a laugh track, and so all the YouTube videos of it have the laughing built in, because he wasn't being laughed at on site when he was giving this speech. I think everybody was doing
I'm
a lot more cringing instead of laughing.
If I'm Bush and if I'm Clinton, I don't want the Library of Congress to be putting this stuff in yet. Until I've had a chance, Bush and Clinton can team up. They can release their own CD of whoppers, make money, and then at that time, Library of Congress can take it over.
Yeah.
Because if I'm them, I want to be living off my own verbal indexterity.
Right. It might be copyrightable. Listen, that's my mark here. You can't have that stuff.
Exactly.
You know, you're going to get some royalties out of this deal. Actually, you know, I'm just thinking about this now in terms of the presidents and gaffes and things like that. I mean, really, you could probably put all of the Nixon tapes in.
Everything in there.
You know, like, and so that's probably recorded. That could be something that'll go in. That's like a historical thing. And a number of them, you know, they've been released over time. And, you know, maybe if they only had to have one clip, it'll be the various dropouts, the missing parts of the tape. Those would be the ones that are in there. For any of our listeners who are too young to know who Richard Nixon was, check Google. You know,
that's right.
Figure it. Or Wikipedia, for that matter. So I think that's all I can think of in terms of the historical stuff. There's a lot more historical stuff in the registry, and I should mention when we put this up on the blog or the link, you know, maybe we'll put it right in the post actually now, because now we've figured out how to do that with the iTunes, where you can have it in there. We'll have a link to the Wikipedia page of the National Recording Registry, which lists everything that's ever been on there.
Yeah, we're ready to promote them.
So, like,
even though they have still not invited us into the National Recording Registry,
that's right.
We will promote the Library of Congress.
Yeah,
that's a reflection of the type of generous people that we are.
So you'll see a lot more. There's a lot of historical stuff. You know, a lot of big speeches that have to do with war times and things like that. But you know, there's only so many. That we can go through that everybody be able to even hear on here and things like that. And so it's fairly interesting, but we're going to move off of that too, but stick with sort of spoken word type of things.
Okay.
Because back before everybody had TVs, there's quite a bit that was recorded in the nature of entertainment that wasn't necessarily music. For example, one of the first and earliest recordings, and I believe this was in the first induction of stuff into the National Historic Registry, was Casey at the Bat. Now, Zeph, do you know anything about Casey at the Bat?
I have no idea.
Right, so Casey at the Bat...
I know Casey Jones,
is basically
who drives the Cannonball Express.
Right, it's sort of a poem, but it's all about, you know, Casey being up at bat. It's a baseball story, you know,
okay.
And it's all about and how, you know, everybody's expecting to be the big hero, and in the end, he strikes out. I
okay.
hope I haven't... Spoiler alert, Casey strikes out in the end. So, interestingly enough about this... So
basically, this glorifies failure.
Well, it's all about, like, you know, all the hoopla and, you know, the disappointment at the end.
Is this based on a real Casey? Or is that just the name they've given?
No, I think it's a fictional story. I mean, maybe it's based on somebody, but, you know, it's sort of like classic old-time comedy. So the recording that is in the registry is a particular one by DeWolf Hopper. And in fact, oddly enough, the registry actually has a link to this, so I'm going to play it from there. But it's from 1909. And so
okay.
we're getting way, way back
yeah.
there in terms of recordings, and so that's sort of interesting. But we're going to listen to this version for a second, and everybody will go, I don't know what the heck the guy's talking about, because it's like, it doesn't even sound like a normal language in this context here.
That Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. A smile is gone from Casey's face. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. Somewhere bands are playing and somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
So that's the specific recording they put
okay.
in there, right? I mean, and that is, I mean, it's important from...
Didn't Monty Python do that?
They might have.
Because that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's really, like, kind of a mess, but it's interesting that they picked one. Like, so, for example, there's, when I went looking around for other ones, there's a...
It looked extremely rocky for the Mudville Nine that day.
So this is Jackie Gleason, right? So,
right.
I mean, this is to the tune of 50 years later, you know?
But with one inning left to play.
You know. So now it's sort of intelligible.
Right.
But it became sort of a classic routine.
But so I'm going to ask you a question now. Serious question. I'm asking you because you've done all the research.
Yeah.
Casey at the Bat is a poem, right?
Kinda. I mean, it's not like a poem in the sense of I don't think that's where it started. I think it started always as a recording, but it's written in the rhythms of a poem. Like it's sort
right,
of lines
so,
and verses.
So
and
the first one that we heard...
Mm-hmm.
The one with the guy putting on a really fake actor's voice.
Yeah.
That's the one that's gone in the Library of Congress.
That's right.
Because that's the original.
I don't know if it's the actual original or if it's just maybe the original author. Maybe you know, but it does seem like they picked it. It wasn't just picking a routine. It was picking this recording. And I think probably a lot of it has to do with the thing. It's from 1909. You know, it was a big deal like that you... This would be a new type of media, basically.
I'm
going to
make
stage.
A comment. And obviously, a lot of this old stuff is going in because back in the day, people sat around their radio with their hot chocolate and Ovaltine and all that kind of nonsense. I'm going to tell you something for free. Back in the day, a lot of that radio sucked. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Because
I mean,
if it's a Sunday night and you're saying to me, oh, do you want to come over and have a couple of beers and listen to the fella read Casey at the Bat? I'm going, you must be joking.
Might have been a big deal at the time. Listen, your choice at the time was
Staying home and reading my copy of Treasure Island.
Your choice, and I'm not even sure if this was like on the radio. Was there radio regularly around in 1909?
Oh, well, I'm not buying that.
You may have gone to see it live. You may have gone to see a live reading of Casey at the Bat, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, what was your choice? Read a book? I mean, like, you know, like, realize there were very few competing options for your attention at the time.
Let me tell you something, and I know that you are a critic. I am so glad that Apple have invented all this different entertainment technology, because if that was my listening choices of a Monday evening, I don't know if I'd make it through the night.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating
right now.
I mean, when you think about that, you know, by contrast, how much of a big deal that would have been. Like, it was such a big deal. Now, boom, I can click on a couple of buttons and I can pull it up on a computer in 2 seconds.
Or I can skip to the next thing.
But as long as, you know, baseball, obviously.
All right, I'll give
you that. Big part of big baseball is a big part of our history in America.
U.S. cultural history, that's right. Yeah, not
Britain,
so much,
although, you know, they have had some baseball.
Although I think it was probably a sport that we invented and then you lot co-opted. That tends to be most things.
Something like that, you know, it's related to rounders, they say, historically.
And that's British, yeah.
You know, which is a British thing. As long as we're sticking on comedy, this is obviously when, again, this is an era where you really only had the one sport. It's not like you people are watching football in the early part of the century on a regular basis, but here's another routine that people will be familiar with, I think. Which I may have to do a little fast-forwarding here, of course, which that was poor planning.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team. Look, Abbott, if you're the coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange as it may seem, they give these ball players nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and
his brother Daffy.
Daffy Dean.
And their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean. Oh, I see. Well, let's see. We have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second. I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second. I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach, too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing
who
first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who? Yes.
Now,
that's very good.
I mean, that's funny. I mean, here we are.
That is very funny.
What year would that be? That would be 40s, I think. And so, you know, much closer to 1909 in the original recording of Casey on the Bat than it is to today. And yet that still seems pretty funny, right?
That is funny, yeah.
You know?
So when you said to me, oh, who's on first, I thought it was the Three Stooges.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, Abbott and Costello.
But again, I get confused. I get my large man and short sidekick comedy duos confused.
Well, of course,
could Laurel and Hardy.
Three Stooges are neither of those, but Laurel and Hardy is the other classic.
Yeah, but I think
one,
two of the Stooges, if you've got Three Stooges, at least one of them is sort of rotund and one of them is going to be smaller.
Well, I guess so. But they're roughly the same height.
All right, fair enough.
You know? But Laurel and Hardy were more of a visual thing, whereas Abbott and Costello much more talky. You know?
Right.
You know, like that rhythms or things like that are much more the Abbott and Costello thing. Now, were you, actually, to digress, when you were a kid, did you see any or heard of Abbott and Costello? Like, I mean, there's certain comedy things.
The films and stuff we had in the UK.
Yeah, I don't know
for some reason, I know, again, getting my rotund and smaller sidekick comedy duos confused. There was a radio station, there was a radio show when I was a kid that used to play at the weekend, and it was called Ed Stewart's Children's Hour. I might be confused now. This is going back 30-odd years. Every weekend, they would play Laurel and Hardy singing On the Trail of the Lonesome Pine in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. I would attempt to sing it, but I'm not going to do that. And I'm a little shocked to see that it's probably not in the Library of Congress thingy-o. But yeah, that's what we were exposed to. But when I was a kid, you know, because I know you have this somewhere coming up, I was brought up in a household where we listened to a lot of radio comedy, yeah. I'm sorry. And the BBC has a long tradition of great radio comedy. There's this English guy called Anthony Hancock, who is a legend, who I love. My own mother was a big fan of Anthony Hancock, so I listened to him. Also, Bob Newhart,
yeah,
which I know you're going to play.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, even though I have just made the comment that back in the day, sitting around listening to the radio kind of sucked.
You still did.
We still did. And there is no better way to get laughs than via the radio. I think it's terrific. I think it's much like listening to Abbott and Costello there. They used to show all their films or TV shows when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of that.
Right, right.
But that routine, I've heard.
Yeah.
And listening to it now, I don't need to see the two guys, but I do. Yeah, I get it. That's funny.
So you mentioned another one that's in there now. The Who's on First routine is in there. I don't know if the recording I played is actually the one that was put in there, but it's in the.
Can you feel the nostalgia wafting through the studio?
Yeah, right. Then the next one, which was mid to late 60s, was the Bob Newhart album. A Zipper Down Mind, which was a whole album of comedy with like different sort of sketches in there, one of which was pretty well known, Infinite Number of Monkeys.
Mathematics books, they made reference to something that either proves infinity or the law of probability. They claim that if you take an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters and you set them down and they just type away, that eventually, given enough time, they would type all the great books.
I was wrong. It's the button down mind, okay. I should mention here.
Now,
I think he had
a
sequel.
But eventually they will type all the great books. If they ever tried this, they would have to hire guys, you know, to check the monkeys to see if they were turning out anything worthwhile. So I would like to present a day in the life of one of these monitors. Harry... I'm going to check post 14, see if he's got anything. Oh, boy. I don't think that poor devil's ever going to write anything, you know that? Harry, hold on. Post 15 here has something. I think this is famous or something. To be or not to be, that is the Gazornan plaque.
So, I mean, that's practically the whole bit, you know, and obviously this is a whole different type of comedy. I mean, I think apart from it being funny, the reason that this album is on there is because it was really like...
But that was cutting edge then.
Yeah, it was part of different arts, you know, between jazz and different types of movies and things like that. It was like a new form of doing comedy and things like that. And,
but again, that's in the National Recording
Registry. That one is in there also. You know, I had a hard time trying to think of what else ought to be in there. And the truth is, there's a lot, obviously, when you think about comedy, there's lots of comedy we've heard that was huge. I mean, like, I think of Eddie Murphy's Raw as being, that was like the biggest deal when we were teenagers and listened to that sort of stuff. But it was a movie, right? You know, like, I mean, obviously you could put it in for its audio version, but it is not in and of itself an audio recording. You could easily listen to it.
It counts as a film, all right, yeah.
You know, so, like, it's not just for the sake of its audio. It would play fine as audio, but it's not like people had that as an album they were listening to. You put it on the TV, and you watched it on TV when it was rerun over and over again on the cable channels kind of thing.
Well, again, I'm going to say this, and I mentioned them a bit earlier, making fun of Casey at the Bat. Monty Python.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you'd have to, again, it would have to be a recording, and they did have quite a few comedy albums.
Recording of a live show, they have comedy albums.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of their stuff is very visual, you know, like there's a lot
That is true.
I had one of their albums, and I guess part of it would be thinking about, and this is one of the interesting things, we'll come to music, there's quite a bit of British stuff that's in
that's
music
what I'm saying.
Stuff.
It's not, and I do say, when as soon as I said Monty Python, I'm thinking, ooh, but they're British.
Not, right.
But, again, you're right. When we come to the music, well, there's going to be lots of bands that you either don't think of them as belonging to a country, or you definitely don't think of them as being U.S.-centric.
Right.
I think the bottom line for Monty Python is they'd be in if they'd done more stuff with Paul Simon.
Probably. So, you know, I think that kind of takes us through all the talking stuff. I guess, you know, one thing to mention in terms of the comedy aspect of it is when I was trying to think of comedy-type things, when I think of the great lines and things that are comedy things, they're like I said, they're movie-related. But I think, you know, we could make some exceptions for certain bits and pieces of things, like, for example...
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough... the tough get going! Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!
So, you know, obviously the Animal House clip.
John Belushi.
You know, that's just great, great stuff. But, again, it's a movie. But I'm going to have to call up this guy and talk to him a little bit.
Yeah, it's just because it was a movie doesn't mean it doesn't count.
Right. And that's the kind of stuff it has such a, like...
Because that Casey at the Bat sounded like bad radio. And that got in.
That's right, right. But there's certain things like that that just have such fantastic comedic resonance that the fact that they're not in there already, it's the fact that we say them over and over again.
Cinderella story, this unknown, comes out of nowhere to lead the pack. At Augusta, he's on his final hole. He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
That's quite a long club.
Very long, yes.
Well, he got all of that. The crowd is standing on his feet here at Augusta. The normally reserved Augusta crowd going wild.
So Bill Murray and Caddyshack, which certain members of the Atlantic Voice family feel that that is a bad movie. They are wrong.
That would be me.
You think it's a bad movie?
I think it's a bad movie, too. But I understand. I like it's funny bad. But I'm going to say this now for Bill Murray.
No, it's funny.
I love Bill Murray. Frankly, what's the movie with the little hedgehog? Don't Drive Angry. The little movie with the thing.
Groundhog Day.
There you go. You see, Don't Drive Angry. That's an even more famous Bill Murray moment to me.
Oh, no, no. That last one was a good one.
Maybe we'll need to do a separate debating Bill Murray, a separate show.
You know, and I guess not all of them have to necessarily be comedies and things like that. We've got certain famous lines that, you know, get immortalized in through the film originally, but we all recognize them.
What we've got here is... failure to communicate.
So, from Cool Hand Luke, often sampled, I believe, into songs and things like that. It's such an iconic piece of audio.
Exactly.
You know, you don't in fact, when you looked at the picture of it, I would not have remembered, and I've seen the movie quite a few times.
But as soon as he talks, we know what it's from.
It's the audio piece of it that's that fascinating.
So, I'm going to say this. They're not allowing stuff in for film. Yet, that is, that line, for example, what we have here is a failure to communicate. That is iconic. The Kennedy speech. I don't want to dump on Kennedy. The Kennedy speech.
You're sort of an anti-Kennedy.
Don't ask what we can do for each other, that one. Again, that's 74 minutes of we don't remember anything that he talked about. And then 5 seconds of sheer class / immortality.
Mm-hmm.
How is that any... How does that get in and... what we have here is a failure to communicate. Does not.
Yeah, again, putting aside it's a movie, you know, things
again,
like that.
Again, and Paul Simon didn't work with Kennedy. Paul Simon did not work with Paul Newman.
Right.
So right there, we can remove the Paul Simon factor. There's clearly a bias towards Paul Simon at the National Recording Registry. That's all. I just don't understand how these things... You're going to play another one now.
Well,
I know that these things are iconic. These are part of our...
Yeah, so we start to, you know, just to clear the things that are non-music, because I think we're going to start talking about music, and that's going to take up a good amount of time here. But, like, there are some other little bits of audio when I was thinking of things I've heard, but again, it's got a video component, although this one barely has a video component, but... So, you know, it's Ed McMahon introducing Johnny Carson.
Every night for 30 years, America went to bed hearing Here's Johnny.
I guess they'd have to select which one was the best one. If they're going to immortalize one, which one they have to go through all the Here's Johnnies and figure out which one was the best one. Although maybe some of them were dubbed over and things like that. Or another one of my favorites, and because it's so short, the audio I have has the repeated and multiple versions of it. And this one gets credit because it is even in the dictionary now, so.
Go, 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 go,
Homer Simpson's go. I mean, this is...
Go, 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 go.
So I don't know about you, but this is something that is actually in things I actually... When things happen to me, I regularly go, don't! You know, it's a part of our vocabulary now. Maybe the most important sound from all of television ever.
Well, I'm going to say this now. Maybe, see, in the same way that here at the Atlantic Voice, we have, to steal a line from a great film, The Long Good Friday, Hands Across the Ocean. why doesn't the Library of Congress work with the British Library? The British Library are recording accents and sounds, yeah. and this is what it sounds like with a what's it. Things like that, we'll stick them in ours. Because they are, again, a cartoon character going dull now appears in the dictionary.
Yep.
Now that has historic slash cultural slash historic significance. So there you go.
Yeah. So I think that about does it for our spoken stuff, and so we're gonna transition over there. But just in case we have to do any clipping thing, I'm gonna just go play us out on some does on the way out.
Please
here,
do.
So we can sort.
Do 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 do.
This way you can just fade this one out when you're editing it, and we can say goodbye.
We'll say goodbye and come to our music. You have been listening to the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us at atlanticvoice.net, email us atlanticvoice@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter @Atlantic_voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.